while you drink Tangerine, so you can reminisce and wish you wasn't living so devilish. Shit, I remember I was just like you, smoking blunts with my crew, flipping over 62s, cause GED wasn't B-I-G. I got P-A-I-D, that's why my mom hate me. She was forced to kick me out, no doubt. Then I figured out it went for 20,000 out. Packed up my tools for my raw power move. Block 19 for casket and flower moves. For Trump's trying to stop my flow, and what they don't know will show on the autopsy. Went to see Poppy to cop me a brick. Asked for such a sign and he wasn't trying to hear it. Smoking mad Newports cause I'm doing court for an assault that I caught in Bridgeport, New York. Catch me if you can like the gingerbread man. You better have your cat in hand cause man.
All right, we're back here on the Chat New England podcast, episode 17. I am Nick LaRocque, and as always, I'm joined by Ben Babcock from Chat Pats. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. As some of the listeners may know, I am broadcasting tonight from a remote location in New Mexico. And let me tell you, it's a whole different experience being holed up in a hotel room with a headset microphone combination on, looking out at small town New Mexico on a Wednesday night. It's a very strange experience, man, but I think it's pretty fitting for like a podcaster such as myself. I think this is kind of what the lifestyle is like, you know.
Now, how many people who you've interacted with this week in New Mexico do you think are part of the witness protection program?
I would have to say a handful, if not more, because this is a place you come to disappear. Absolutely. It's very remote, very desolate, very dusty, very eerie kind of place. You know, it's very different from New England, you know, from what I'm used to. But all in all, it's not bad. It could be worse, man. I've stayed in hotels in worse places. Let's put it that way.
So a little interesting thing here, probably not the case where you are, but I was coming home today, and my suburb has been occupied.
Really? Like the Wall Street occupations?
Yeah, man. They are occupying the Silicon Valley, and yeah, man, it's right off the exit. It's being occupied.
Do you know what they're protesting?
Well, we've got a lot of big businesses around, a lot of brokers, I guess. I'm not really sure what a broker is, but apparently there are a lot of big brokers, and we also have a lot of big companies right around the corner here, the Facebook, the Skype, which we're using right now, you know, Wall Street Journal, Google, all that stuff. So I don't know, but, you know, having lived in the city for quite a few years before moving here, it was kind of exciting to see that. Oh, man, what's going on? Hang on.
Technical difficulties.
Kind of exciting. Yeah, we had technical difficulties for a second there. Yeah, it was exciting to see that, you know, this thing I've been seeing on the news so much had made its way to my town.
Do you think in any way directed at you, some sort of personal vendetta that these people may have against you and all of your capitalistic success?
It could be, man. You know, people often feel threatened by men with large beards who podcast from their
and for good reason. And for good reason. I was wondering what the scene was like out there, because I thought at first when you meant that people were occupying your neighborhood, that it would have something to do with the passing of Steve Jobs. Like everybody was, you know, refusing to work, being very solemn, playing a lot of acoustic guitar on iPads or whatever it is that people do. But this has nothing to do with that, I'm assuming. Something totally different.
Nope. This, from what I could gather from the signs, this seemed to be directed at the other 1% of Americans.
Think we can rest assured knowing that these protesters really have nothing on us, since
yeah, I mean,
it's basically my life is podcasting from a hotel room in New Mexico, and nothing to do with global economies, big banks. You know, my hands are clean of this whole dirty business. So you know, I have a clean conscience.
Yeah, my hands aren't clean, but, you know, I know that I'm innocent anyways. So.
Very good, man. Very good. Very good meandering introduction to the podcast, you know, as always. Very easily taken off course. For those of you who are listening still, indeed, we will talk about football at some point here.
Oh, wait, one last thing, man, since we're not to the NFL yet. I wasn't totally coherent, but I'm pretty sure I texted you some pictures. But last Saturday, I went with some coworkers to the Stanford, Colorado football game.
Unbelievable seats, man.
Yeah, we had some seats right in the second row, right down the field. Sorry, I'm self-conscious now because of the protest. I feel like I need to explain that it's not because I'm a wealthy broker.
You didn't earn those tickets on the backs of unpaid laborers. And your acquisition of those had nothing to do with the foreclosure of somebody's house.
No, man.
Verify that.
Actually, you know, because Colorado is so bad and we were in the Colorado section, they were really easy to get. The ticket only cost $10 in the parking lot, and I actually gave the guy $20 because it was all I had, and I didn't feel like waiting for change.
Don't try and be all charitable now. I think we all see through this thin facade that you're putting on. That was a tax write-off for you. I know all about the loopholes.
So we're sitting down there in the second row, and, you know, literally 15 feet from us, down in front of the first row and then right down the field, is Tiger Woods for the entire game, just hanging out.
That's right. Yes, that picture I had to show my wife.
Yeah.
Leave it. You know, maybe it looked like he was trying to get his old mojo back, you know, surrounded by some young co-eds. We'll have to see how he performs in the next golf tournament.
He was playing a tournament around here, which is why he was there, I guess. And apparently on Monday when he was playing in that tournament, somebody threw a hot dog at him. So, you know, there's that. And then in the second half, actually, John Elway walked over and stood on the Colorado side, and he and Tiger chatted up for a bit. So yeah, that was pretty sweet.
Look at you dropping names, sitting in the second row, living in the warm weather, and I'm down here with a bunch of disgraced mobsters hiding from the law. But great Mexican food. Terrific, terrific Mexican food down here.
I also like the Southwest color palette, the oranges, the turquoises. I like that. I like that thing they have going on.
It is, man. It is. I got to say, it's completely flat and desert-like down here, but it is kind of it's like being on a different planet, you know. But
anyways. Well, should we talk about the NFL?
I think we should, man. I think it's what the people came here for, maybe. I like to think that they enjoy our mindless banter as well, but week 5 in the books, and I'd like to get your take on this Giants game, because I was following along, and I should thank you again. I don't know if this is legal or not, but I was accessing Nick's DirecTV season pass. I was literally in an airport with people speaking in southern accents, just like in the DirecTV commercial with the little Deion Sanders game fairy comes by, and boom, on my smartphone, and I watched the entire Patriots game as well as the Red Zone channel sitting in the terminal. My flight was delayed for 2 hours. It was like a miracle. I got to watch the entire game. I thought I was going to miss the second half, and it was great. But I was flipping back and forth watching that Giants game. Your thoughts, man? That one's going to hurt a little bit.
It hurts a lot. And that's why I took my time getting to this topic of the NFL today. You know, it seemed to me like it was a trap game for sure. And, you know, the fact that the coaching staff and the front office were talking all week about how it was a trap game made me think, okay, you know, they're addressing it. We're going to be fine. Not an issue. But it totally was. And if you watch the whole game, you could see, particularly in the first half, the Giants' defense was flat. And, you know, there's an issue that I've had all year with the way that the defensive play calling has gone, is that they're not being aggressive enough, in my mind. They are blitzing in the red zone, and good things are happening from it. You know, I mean, this game, it could have been the Seahawks in a blowout at halftime if it weren't for two fumbles in the red zone one forced by OCU Mignore. I mean, the other one, you know, tough to really give credit the Giants too much on it, but, you know, it did come with pressure. But, you know, before that, it just feels like they're playing back. They're not bringing pressure. And I understand that, you know, they're a team that's been able to generate pressure with their front four. But with Justin Tuck out, it just seems like, you know, and OC being out before that, it just seems to me like that's a dangerous game to play. And, you know, and Tavares Jackson was able to pick them apart. And I don't know. It just seems I get it. And I get that the secondary is banged up. And so, you know, when you sort of have patchwork back there, you know, the last thing you can be doing is sending extra guys at the quarterback. But it just feels like there was no fire to that defense. It seems like they weren't being aggressive. And, you know, by the time they did wake up, it was just too late. You know, and offensively, so, and feel free to chime in. I don't want to just talk for like 20
minutes.
No,
I feel like this is very cleansing experience for you. I'm going to, you know, I do have some questions and some points I'll bring up, but please, by all means, I think you need to get this off your chest.
Okay.
You've carried this with you long enough. It's Wednesday. It's time to face the facts.
All right. And I will just say defensively, a guy that's not getting any credit is Corey Webster. He's been playing really well all season. And I, like we said in the summer, I think if Terrell Thomas was healthy, that really would be an outstanding secondary. offensively, you know, the one thing I just want to say is it's easy to look at the box score and talk about Eli Manning, you know, having a bad game after being good in the first 4 weeks. He played really, really well. He's not getting any help from the offensive line. Boss, the starting center, was out this week. In addition, Chris Snee went down towards the end of the game. He's getting pressured a lot, and they haven't been able to run the ball. They're 31st in the league right now in yards per carry. The last time that they carried a rushing total this low or rushing average this low for a whole season was 1954. And you know, Brandon Jacobs was out, and so certainly that makes a difference. But I'll tell you what. When you look at what they were asking Eli Manning to do, how much they were asking him to do, I thought he played phenomenal. And the third interception, you know, when you see it in the red zone, Victor Cruz's foot slips. And, you know, so it's not Cruz's fault. It's not anybody's fault. It's just, you know, shitty. His second interception, I also feel like, was not his fault. But, you know, the 420 yards and 3 touchdowns, I felt like he had a great game, and I felt like he was the only reason they were even in this game. I felt like they didn't even show up to play. Tom Coughlin said afterwards they didn't deserve to win. I totally agree. You know, and so it's got to get better. They got to figure out the run game. I expect the offensive line to have weeks like this as they sort of start to gel, particularly with injuries. But, you know, it was rough, and I'll tell you what, it doesn't get any easier. Doesn't get any easier now. We've got Bills.
We talked about the schedule last week. This is a tough stretch coming up for New York here.
I mean, the whole rest of the season is tough, basically. And, you know, so Buffalo, compared to what we're going to have after them, they're almost an easy game. So we better be ready for it. And this is a chance. They need to make a statement this weekend. They need to win this game. Otherwise, I think the season's going to start to go downhill pretty quickly.
Well, Philadelphia has left the door open for them in a way that I don't think anybody could have foreseen at the beginning of the season. So, you know, they have definitely have an opportunity here, you know, over the next few weeks to seriously put some distance between them and the Eagles. You talked about, you know, the injuries and obviously Tuck out this past week. And it's kind of been the story of the season, you know, with all the injuries, all the players going down for the season, basically by week one. You knew that it was going to be sort of a patchwork effort. And, you know, it was almost at the point where, you know, losing anybody else was really going to be too much. You know, the offensive line is obviously an issue. You know, you look at those two running backs that they have there, and you look at the fact that they have Eli Manning, who's a good quarterback, and some good wide receivers. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to run the ball more effectively than what they're doing. To me, that just seems crazy, because we talked at the beginning of the season, you know, I think this is one of the best running back combinations in the league. And for them to be averaging in the low threes, per carry. It just kind of a shocker there, because, you know, you would have hoped that due to some of the injuries on defense and on the offensive side of the ball, that they would have been able to control the tempo a little bit with those two guys, with Bradshaw and John and Jacobs. But, you know, some real bright spots so far this season. I mean, I think the one that really jumps out to me is the play of Victor Cruz, really stepping up in the last couple weeks here with some huge plays. Obviously, he's an exciting, explosive player. Kind of taking the sting away from the Steve Smith departure, I would have to say.
Yeah, for sure, man. He had 161 yards receiving on Sunday. And, if, you know, I'm sure a lot of people saw that nice one-handed catch he made. And, he's playing great, and he seems to be getting better every week. He's good. And so, again, I'm not worried about, you know, the long-term view of this team, but it just seems like right now that line really needs to gel. And there was a play on Sunday, and there was a play like this against the Cardinals too, where literally as soon as Eli Manning took the snap, he had a defensive lineman on him, and that caused a fumble against the Cardinals. It was a miracle that he didn't fumble in this game. And that's, I mean, it's not even bad blocking. It's just miscommunication. It's just literally a defensive lineman who's pass rushing not being blocked. And, you know, there were also lots of issues with the snap. He had shotgun snaps down at his heels. He had shotgun snaps almost over his head. And I think Jacobs being out really hurt them, because going into this game, they were the best red zone offense in the league. They had been 10 times, and on 8 of those times, they had scored touchdowns. And they couldn't get it done on the last two drives of the game. You know, they had two red zone drives, and they only got 3 points out of it. And I think having a guy like Jacobs to turn up the pace, and especially, you know, when the line is having trouble, to just lower his head and pound the defense, I think that would make a huge difference.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you can put a very positive spin on the Giants' season so far, and definitely take a positive outlook going forward. You know, given all the injuries that they've had, think about how this defense can be when Tuck is back healthy, when OC's there healthy, and they're playing together. And then look at the skill positions, you know, with Bradshaw, Jacobs, then Nix, Manningham, and Cruz. Those are going to be a lot of tough matchups for opposing defenses. So, you know, we talked about kind of tempering the expectations after all those injuries happened in the preseason. And, you know, looking at the way that Philadelphia is just in total disarray right now, Dallas is a team that looks to me to be very, very beatable, you know, very susceptible to collapse. You know, right now it's the Giants and the Redskins in that division. And, you know, Washington has played great, but I don't think they're necessarily as good as their record would reflect. You know, they have a very good defense, but I just still don't believe in Rex Grossman as a 16-game NFL quarterback. You know, I feel like at a certain point, opposing defenses are going to figure that guy out and be able to be effective against him. So, I mean, I think there's definitely some positives here for you.
Yeah, and if we had won that game, we would have been in first place. And the one thing I'll say quickly that is, I agree with you. I think there are a lot of positives. And, you know, Cruz has been the most exciting player. But I'll tell you what, Eli Manning and Hakeem Nicks are really developing a pretty nice chemistry, man. Nicks had a touchdown, and it was just a really – really nice ball, really nice catch, and it just—you can just tell that those two are on the same page, and they're starting to finish each other's sentences in a football sense. You know what I mean? Eli, they were talking about it in the broadcast. Eli knows when to put it on Nix's back shoulder when the defender's playing off of him, and he knows.
I'm sorry, but I was going to say something when you said finishing each other's sentences, and then you say that Manning knows when to put it on Nix's back shoulder. Just drowning in double entendre here.
The point is, it's like when he used to have Plaxico, and I actually think Nix is a better receiver. Just total confidence. They seem to, you know, I mean, because think about if you had been paying attention to the Giants the last few years, how many interceptions Manning had when it was miscommunications with receivers, and those two being on the same page And Eli having the kind of confidence to just put it up there for him, and Nick's always being able to go get it. It's a good thing. I really feel good about it.
Yeah, you gotta like it. I think it's gonna be exciting, man, because you know this is gonna be a division, and the NFC I think in general is gonna be that's gonna be pretty exciting come weeks 13 through 16 when all these playoff spots are gonna get sorted out.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you mentioned Plaxico Burress because that's kind of an interesting transition here to the Jets Patriots. Did you hear about all the scuttlebutt coming out of New York? Is that Burress, Derek Mason, and Santonio Holmes approached Rex Ryan and the coaching staff last week to complain about Mark Sanchez and/or offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer's play calling over the first few weeks? First of all, I would guess that this doesn't come as any surprise to you that Burress would be involved in something like this, given that his track record with the Giants and his issues with the coaching staff there. You know, did you hear about this whole situation? What's your take on it?
I haven't heard about it. I'm actually, it surprises me a little bit because, you know, Plaxico to me is a guy when he was with the Giants who he butted heads with the coaches all the time over, you know, things like him being late and over him missing, you know, physical therapy sessions and things like that. In terms of the on-the-field stuff and the team, I always felt like he was, you know, when it got to on the field, he was in line. He was doing what he was supposed to do all the time. So I'm a little bit surprised, but I'm really excited to hear it.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, it kind of caught me off guard. On one hand, because, you know, I kind of expected that Burress would kind of do the good citizen thing here and keep his head down, you know, given that he's just come out of jail and been given a second chance here. It seemed like it's a little bit early for him to be, you know, have his name being swirled around in something like this, going after the quarterback, going after the offensive coordinator who you've played for 4 weeks. I mean, if I'm Mark Sanchez, I'm probably pretty hurt by this because, I mean, what hasn't Sanchez done enough to earn the respect of his teammates? And isn't it the fact that, whether it's completely true or not, what we're hearing from the press, isn't the fact that there's a story there at all, even the rumors swirling about some issues between those guys and the quarterback, isn't that indicative of a problem? It's just kind of like if there's a smoke, there's fire type situation. I mean, this is a guy who's led him to two straight AFC championship games, and, you know, it's 4 weeks into the season and they're not happy with their role. Derek Mason has been a non-factor throughout the season. He had one catch for 7 yards last week and basically didn't play 90% of the game. But
yeah, he's also 50 years old.
You know, and that's, you know, that's the thing that I think, you know, you bring some veteran guys in like Plax and like Derek Mason, and you have a younger quarterback. That just seems to be always a tenuous relationship, particularly with guys who've been, you know, number one receivers or star receivers in this league. But, you know, as a Patriots fan, I love this kind of drama going on. It takes away from what the Jets are trying to do. It disrupts the things in their locker room, you know, and even if it's not completely true what's going on, you know, enough of it has to be true enough, I guess, is my interpretation of the situation. You know, Brian Schottenheimer, I feel like they've been trying to, you know, they walked this thin line in New York where Rex is all about the ground and pound, but if you look at, you know, kind of the personnel that they're bringing in and, you know, a lot of their play calling in the last few years, they seem to be trying to make Sanchez into, you know, an aired out quarterback. And with varying degrees of success, you know, it hasn't taken them all the way to the Super Bowl. And this year, they just seem to be completely out of sync as an offense. You know, Holmes shows up every now and then with a big play. But, you know, last week against the Patriots, they really had no rhythm whatsoever. And Burress really was a non-factor completely, which to me is surprising given how good of a receiving threat he can be in the red zone. Those two guys just haven't gotten on the same page. So, you know, I love it. I hope things get worse for him there before they get better. But I just thought that was interesting, and I'm wondering, you know, I don't think this is going to be the end of these issues, particularly if the Jets continue to lose. I mean, they're sitting at 2-3 right now, and they're in third place behind the Patriots and Buffalo in their division, a team that a lot of people had picked to win the division this year. So, yeah,
myself included. And
yeah, I mean, I'm completely shocked, actually. You know, and I guess just to talk about the game, given the way that the Patriots had played, particularly on defense, and given the way that, or at least the reputation that the Jets have with their excellent defense and their offense's ability. I mean, the loss to them in the playoffs is still fresh in everybody's mind in New England, and that was a game where they basically came in and just manhandled the Patriots, out-physicaled them, executed when they needed to, converted big third downs for touchdowns. And this past week, it was the roles completely reversed. The Patriots put up 450 yards on offense and held the Jets to 255 yards total. Ben Jarvis Greenhalgh carried the ball 27 times for 136 yards, two scores. The Patriots took it to New York. Nothing more indicative than the third and fourth quarter when the Patriots had a lead, grinding out the clock, obvious running situations, handing the ball off, converting the first downs, scoring in the red zone. It was, as a Patriots fan who's been worried about the play of this defense, it was just an amazing game from that respect. Just to see the defense really step up, held the Jets to 3 of 11 on third downs, and, you know, it just a complete 180 from the week before in terms of yards given up. It was a very, very important game for New England, I think, especially for this young defense. I'm really hoping it's a momentum builder going forward.
How about Vegas, man? We texted about this.
Oh, unbelievable. And it didn't really set in until the game was over. And I'm sure that, you know, maybe they didn't, because for those of you who don't check the lines like Nick and I do, 9-point spread from Vegas, Patriots giving 9 points. They win by 9. And the over-under set at 51.
Or they won by 10, right?
No, 9.
Really? Okay.
Yep. The line was 9. They won by 9, at least the line that I saw. And then the over-under was 51. Patriots win 30-21. It's like the Twilight Zone, man. That's one of the reasons why I don't gamble anymore, I guess, is because crazy shit like that happens.
Dude, I thought that was the worst line of maybe the entire season. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Patriots-Jets, a 9-point game, that's insane. And sure, and even, you know, looking back at it now, hearing you, you know, talk about those stats, you know, when I really think about it, I guess they really did outplay them. But just watching it sort of casually and enjoying it, you know, it didn't feel like a 9-point game.
No, and it was close until, you know, the third quarter, the Patriots got up by 2 scores finally. And then were able to control the clock with the running game. But, you know, yeah, it was kind of a shocker to me. Because, you know, when you said the line, I was guessing 7. But I still thought it was going to be a closer game. And it was it's a close 9-point game for sure. But, you know, it was nuts. I mean, it was awesome. I was sitting there in the terminal, just watching my flight time get bumped further and further along. You know, the one problem with watching the game in the airport is that a bunch of creepy people come and sit next to you and, like, pretend to not be looking at the game, but they're obviously watching the game on my laptop, like, right there. And I'm like, hey. And they're like, hey. And then they just keep watching the game. But the Patriots defense, man, it's just, and the running game is the story for me. I mean, Brady had a great game, throwing the ball too. But, you know, the ground and pound was New England. And the defense, 3 and outs all throughout the game. It was awesome. I mean, and if you want to talk about the play calling, the Jets threw, I believe, had 3rd and short 5 times, so 3rd and 4 or less. And I believe they threw the ball on all 4 of those downs and didn't convert them. So, you know, a team that's got a running back like Sean Green, granted he hasn't had the kind of season that a lot of people expected, but a team that has built itself to be a physical running team who's supposed to be able to go out there and get three tough yards whenever they need to go to the pass on third down five times and then to not convert it, you wonder, does that have anything to do with, those guys complaining about the play calling? Is it bad play calling? Is it poor execution? Are they overthinking things a little bit too much here? Who knows? I mean, it's still early in the season. I expect the Jets to be there in the hunt at the end of the year. We got to play them again in four or five weeks. So, but again, the biggest thing is the way that I hope that this defense can rally around this performance last week and really build something positive off it. You know, they're missing Jerod Mayo in the middle, but Gary Guyton played a great game, stepping in inside. And, Albert Haynesworth played a limited role, but when he was in there, had some great plays inside. So that's a very positive thing. I think they're still holding him back a little bit, but he had some really, really great plays inside. Won't show up on the stat sheet, but just absolutely dominated Nick Mangold one play, getting in the backfield, blowing things up. So there's a lot of positives to take away from this week for Patriots fans.
Yeah, and one thing, I don't know why this sticks in my mind, but I think it was even in the first half, there was a time when Ocho Cinco caught two passes in a row. I don't know why. That really sticks with me. The whole crowd cheered after he caught his first one, I think.
Well, the last few games, he's getting like 2 to 4 looks a game from Brady. And, primarily over the last couple games, I believe most of them have been, 10-yard outs, outcut, and then a couple slants. So just some really simple stuff. I mean, but I think it's Brady and Ocho Cinco are kind of moving in the right direction in the sense that he's made a few catches for first downs now. He's made some tough catches on the sideline. Little by little, I think they're starting to build, some sort of relationship. Clearly, Welker and the tight ends are the go-to guys, and Branch as well. But you know what? To his credit, Ocho Cinco looks to be working hard on the field. He's not, he catches the ball. Granted, he's only getting two or three a game, maybe, but gets up, goes back to the huddle. You don't see him, making any big deal out of any production out of having a catch for a first down or coming up with a big catch. So those are good things. I mean, like we talked about a few weeks ago, and I said I thought that, a good year for him this year with the Patriots might be to catch 30, 40 balls this season. And I still believe that. I think what we can hope to see is him just continue to get confidence, continue to gain the confidence of Brady and this offense. And if he's your third option, when teams are doubling up on Welker, doubling up on the tight ends, and you have a guy who you know can run a good route for a first down on the backside in single coverage, that's going to be completely invaluable for this team going forward, particularly in the playoffs when teams have kind of been able to confuse Brady and Welker and that combination. And having him as a solid third option, which I think is what he's going to continue to be, third or fourth, that's as much as you can ask for. I mean, if that's what he gives them, then what they're paying him and the deal that they made to get him on this team was completely worth it, because he's doing all the right things, saying all the right things. So I think it's a good, steps going forward. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would just say on the Jets, ground and pound is what they need to be doing. At least when I've watched them be good, and then you can feel free to disagree if you want, Mark Sanchez to me is a guy who is managing the offense. They're running the ball. And he's certainly made some big throws, but, I'm even thinking of a few years ago when they they I can't remember the details now, but they went further than I expected them to. I think it was the year the Patriots lost to the Ravens.
Yeah. And they ended up playing Indy.
Yeah, you know, and when they are a running team, I think he can – I think that makes him a pretty effective than quarterback when they have to pass. But, I mean, this is not a guy that's going to carry you off. You're not going to have an aerial attack with this guy. I mean, you know, most quarterbacks you can't. Tom Brady can do that. Peyton Manning can do that. Aaron Rodgers can do that. But, I mean, you know, I even told you, Eli Manning – who I think is much better than Sanchez, you know, was basically asked to be the whole offense on Sunday, and, you know, look what he ends up with. Yeah, he's got 420 yards and three touchdowns. He's also got three interceptions. The Giants also don't win the game, you know.
Right. No, you can't underestimate the value of the running game. And, you know, this game is a good illustration of it for the Patriots, too, because without that 152 yards on the ground, you know, Brady only put up one touchdown, one and threw a pick. A lot of yards, but the yards that seem to count for closing a game out, for converting tough third downs, for scoring inside the red zone, more often than not, those are yards that come either on the run or set up by the run, play action, teams for being forced to respect that. And that's what Sanchez has done so well. Play action, working the tight end, you know, guys on delayed routes, but, you know, it's early. And trust me, I mean, anybody who watched him play against the Patriots last year, some of the throws that he made, particularly one down the sideline to Santonio Holmes for a touchdown, you know, those are perfect, perfect throws. He can make some of those throws, but I don't think he's a guy who's going to get you, bring you 80 yards down the field, just throwing the ball. So,
no,
you know,
hello?
Your identity. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying it's early still, relatively speaking. You know, like the Giants are having problems on the offensive line. There's time for them to, you know, in the next few weeks, this is where teams are going to either fall off or make their run. You know, they're either going to get it together or they're not, and it's going to be by week 10, 9, 10, 11, it's going to be too late. So, you know, nothing – I wouldn't stick a fork in the Jets now at 2-3, but they've certainly made it difficult for themselves. And the Patriots got a huge win here this week.
Yeah, and that controversy is not going to help. I mean, that is one thing I do really appreciate about the Giants and about the Patriots, actually, is, you know, guys will say things from time to time. You know, sometimes OCU Mignora will tell reporters he's unhappy with his contract. But you know, by and large, anything like that, anything that happens in-house stays in-house. We don't know about it. And I think that's really important. And I feel like, you know, there are teams that sort of do the opposite, like the Jets and like the Cowboys. And everything that goes on is big news. And I can see the value in that a little bit in the sense that it's entertainment. You want your team to be out there and being talked about. But, you know, This is not going to be good for team morale. This is not going to be good for the locker room. This is the last fucking thing you need, you know, coming off two consecutive losses, one in which you got your asses handed to you by Baltimore, and then another, a tough one on the road against a division opponent.
Yeah, that's, I mean, at this point, when you start hearing rumors like this circulating and things continue to not go well, It's going to be a very important moment for Rex Ryan, for the coaches, and for that team to either decide that they're going to come together and play as a team, or they're going to kind of continue to fracture off into different cliques. And you know, it just never works. Quarterbacks and wide receivers fighting, because you know, you can ask for the ball all you want. And you might get an opportunity. And a couple times during that game, Burris dropped a couple passes. So, you know, if you're going to go and make a complaint about, you know, not getting the ball enough, you got to produce when you have the opportunity. And that's going to do nothing. That kind of stuff does nothing but create bitterness between the players. And, you know, don't try and show up your quarterback, particularly when you're new to the team, in the case of Mason and Burris. And particularly when it's a team that's been to the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row, you know, you need to go. You need to show up and prove that you're good enough to be on that team with those guys. Not, you know, it's not his fault all of a sudden. But
right.
I don't even like talking about the Jets that much.
Yeah, why don't we move on?
I fucking hate those guys.
A couple of things. One, Lions. They really looked like they belonged on Monday Night Football.
Wow, man, it's hard to believe that it's been 10 years since they've played a Monday Night game, and you know, the whole atmosphere there. That is a city that is completely energized by his team. Barry Sanders coming out for the kickoff before the game. That's kind of the Lion legacy there is pretty much Barry Sanders, you know, a team that has never really had much success, a real long stretch of piss poor performances over the last 10 years. And now you look at them 5-0, a young team, a talented team, and they just seem like they've got so much positive momentum right now. They showed a graphic, and if you look at, you know, people talk about the Patriots and like Bill Belichick's draft genius. You look at the last three drafts for the Detroit Lions after a long period where they were just striking out left and right with lottery picks. But the last three drafts, you get Calvin Johnson, you get Matthew Stafford, and then Ndamukong Suh. And I mean, that's unbelievable.
Crazy.
Those three guys, that is their team right now. And Their team, you know, and that's – it's exciting, man. And I've enjoyed watching them. You know, I hope they get some more primetime games. I think they deserve it. I can't wait for them to have a showdown with Green Bay. It's exciting, man. They're fun to watch because they look genuinely, you know, thrilled. You know, you just got to feel good for the organization. For the head coach, Schwartz, who was there during, you know, an 0-16 season, to bounce back. It's fun to watch.
It's great, man. And I'm high on them. I'm ready to put Sue in the Hall of Fame right now. And they've had some of those strange games this year where they had come back in the fourth quarter. And I wasn't, you know, Monday night.
But you mean they're getting those wins now? I mean, look at last season. I felt like they're on the verge. And remember, they lost a couple games in the last minute. One on do you remember the controversial Calvin Johnson touchdown catch that they ended up calling an incomplete pass?
Yeah, that was bullshit, man.
They lost two or three games like that, it seemed like, last year on kind of fluky last minute things. Now they're getting the bounces. Now they're getting the calls. I mean, and Calvin Johnson, I mean, somebody stop this guy. It's just, he's in the zone right now. I mean, he's putting up insane numbers and just making insane plays where, it reminds me of Randy Moss in 2007, where you can just throw the ball up to that guy, regardless of how many defenders are there. He's coming down with it. Freakish performances so far this year.
Yeah. And, it's great. And something going into Monday night, I said, okay, this is on the big stage. So there's no sneaking up here. This is Monday night. And I'll tell you what, that was probably the most complete game they've played. I mean, they were dominant all over the place. And, they look good, man. I mean, I just assumed I was going to be wrong when we did our TGE draft, and I said I'm drafting the Lions and I think they're going to win that division. I was just trying to be a little
just
bit
trying
over
to be controversial.
Yeah, but it looks
you're
like
doing your best shock jock.
Yeah, that's what I do, man. You throw shit against the wall and you see what sticks, you know.
Hey man, it's sticking. I mean, that's exciting. I'm excited to see them play, you know, late into the season, and curious to see how they respond to the playoffs, you know, unless they completely fall apart. I mean, that's a playoff team.
Yeah. And great for their fans. I mean, you know, they were saying on Monday night that, you know, this is a team that pretty much sells out every single game. And like you said, when your legacy is basically one player, you know, it's sort of like the Timberwolves with Garnett, you know, the Lions with Barry Sanders. It's that fan base deserves this, and it's great to see them get it.
Yeah, and it was great to see Barry Sanders there to kind of be a part of it, because I feel like it's, you know, I don't know exactly how things ended between him and the Lions, but my sense was that it was not necessarily the most amicable separation. When he retired, you know, he'd kind of been toiling in obscurity up there for a long time, never got the players around him to help him be successful. It just feels like such good karma for them to bring him in and make him be a part of this whole situation. And he, you know, made many remarks to the effect of, you know, he's very humbled and honored to be, you know, be around this group of players, to see the success that this team's having. And, you know, that's a good move by them. That's a great, great PR move by the Lions. Yeah. Got to respect that.
So, yeah, it's great. Now, I think this Sunday is going to be interesting. They're favored by 4 this at home this weekend against a team that is quietly playing really well in the 49ers.
Yeah, well, I mean, quietly when you go out and beat a team 48-3. But, you know, not a lot of people are talking about San Francisco. You're right. And
damn, I mean, that is a good defense, man. That, I mean, not like good. They're like really, really good. You know, what I mean, I assume you're taking the Lions in that game.
Yeah, I think I do like Detroit in that game, you know, particularly if they get the running game going like they did against Chicago. But you're right. No, San Francisco is going to be a tough challenge for them. Where is the game? Is it in Detroit? It's in Detroit. So it's in Detroit. So, I mean, home field was huge in that game Monday night. 3 or 4 offensive false start penalties on the Bears that you could probably attribute to the crowd noise in that place. You know, and they're rolling right now. I think that it's going to be just as loud, if not louder. That'll be a real exciting game to watch.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think regardless of what happens, the Lions are fine. You know, if they do drop that game and end up at 5-1, you know, it would be understandable. It's not a division game. You know, it's the hangover from a big Monday night win. So I wouldn't be totally shocked. I would pick them, but I wouldn't be totally shocked. But I'll tell you what, if they do drop that game, people need to start looking out for San Francisco because they could easily be undefeated right now. They pissed away that game against Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that's been really talented. You look at Alex Smith and the way he's been playing, a total resurgence there with Harbaugh. You know, I think that, you know, like you said, Detroit could fall after, you know, a little hangover thing. But, I mean, Detroit's going to lose a game at some point this season, and that's going to be part of their growing process. You know, they're going to have to regroup, and it could be a good thing for them. You know, it could be a good thing for them to lose a tough game and kind of reassess where they're at. You know, things are riding really high right now. You know, that's not going to kill them, I don't think. But yeah, that'll be a good game, you know, for sure.
Maybe they could lose at home to the Seahawks, and then their fans can all spend the whole entire week in misery.
Well, let's not be crazy. I mean, I can't imagine that happening to anybody.
So there's that line, and I think that's a pretty interesting line. Another line I want to throw at you and get your take on, the Philadelphia Eagles, the 1-4 Philadelphia Eagles, are favored by 1.5 points on the road against the 3-1 Washington Redskins, who are coming off of a bye.
That is a slap in the face for Washington. You know, I mean, Philadelphia certainly has not played up to their potential, but I haven't seen anything from them that makes me believe that, you know, that they didn't deserve to lose all those games. And, you know, their offense has struggled. Washington's defense is playing great right now, and there's blood in the water for the Redskins. I think Shanahan's going to have that team ready. They have to understand that, you know, they want to make a run in this division. This is a must-win game for them. The fact that they're now underdogs against a team that's 1-4, you know, I think that's great bulletin board material. I expect a slugfest, and I'd pick Washington all the way here. Yeah. I think Philadelphia just seems to be reeling right now. You know, Andy Reid does not seem to have control of this locker room or this team. They're just completely out of sync from the play calling to the execution. They're frustrated. you know, people crowned this team 2 months ago, and they're 1-4, looking at a very long, difficult climb to get back even into the playoff picture at this point, even at, only at week 5. You know, if you look at what they're going to have to do in terms of wins over the next 10 weeks, they're at the point right now where, you know, they lose another game or two in this next 2 or 3 game stretch. I think they're done. I think they'll pack it in, and I think it's going to be total destruction down there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, they could
someone's going to have to account for it, and I think Reed's going to be gone.
Yeah, they could run the table from this point on, and they'll be what, 12-4 if they run the table? And they're not going to, right?
I mean, what have we possibly seen from them so far? Besides from the fact that on paper they have some very talented players.
Yeah.
Vic's getting killed. The offensive line is not playing very well in front of them. You know, they just haven't displayed anything. I mean, they've been in some tough situations and have not responded in the way that you would, you know, hope that they could, given all the talent that they have on that team. Just surprising. And, you know, Washington they can play the no respect card all year long. Nobody thought they had a chance in this division this year. And I can't help but think that if you look at the locker rooms of those two teams, you know, which team is more united, which team is more, you know, sharing the same goal and vision, it's the Redskins all the way. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before people are really pointing fingers down to Philadelphia, and things are going to get shaken up there even more, I think.
I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to say this right now. I like Washington in this game. They've had 2 weeks to prepare for this Eagles team. There's no question they have the better coach. And they've just been playing better this year. So I like Washington, and because of that, I'm going to go ahead and bury the Eagles right now, okay? Because that means they're going to be 1-5, okay? And 11-5 is the point at which you're not guaranteed to be in the playoffs. And once they lose this game, it's statistically improbable that they would run the table from that point. So I'm going to pick Washington. I'm burying the Eagles right now. They are not going to make the playoffs this year.
All right.
And that feels fucking really good to say.
Doesn't it? Yeah, it's kind of nice. I mean, it's so much hype surrounding that team. And, you know, you got to earn it. It's just the way it is. You know, you got to earn it. You can't just show it. You can't win the game on paper. And the Eagles have not done that yet this year. So, you know.
But it's the ultimate, you know, people hate when I say this, and there are lots of people out there who don't have any kind of appreciation for football and have, you know, think really negatively of it. But it really is the ultimate team game. Nnamdi Asamoah, it doesn't matter how much you pay him. It doesn't matter if you get him. There are 11 positions on the field. And, frankly, I don't, you know, it's sort of like, I would never overpay for a cornerback the same way I would never overpay for, you know, an outfielder in baseball. I don't understand where all that hype came from when that signing happened. You know, it makes no sense to me.
No, well, it hasn't lived up to the promise, certainly. You know, I think Samuel's outplayed him this year, and he's been inconsistent as well. It just goes to show you that it's all about the execution on Sunday. So,
yeah.
What else around the league? Raiders with a big win this week after Al Davis passes away.
Yeah, I was happy. I was happy for them, man. You know, Al Davis, I took some – you know, I had always heard whispers about, you know, how at the end of the day he really is one of the greatest – contributors to professional football. And so I was reading a little bit after he died, and you know, he really seems like a great guy when you read about how instrumental he was in the AFL and how successful he was as a front office manager, as a front office man. And then, you know, he hired the first black head coach, first woman in the front office, second ever Hispanic coach. He used to refuse to go down and play exhibition games down south during the times of segregation. I mean, just a really, really impressive guy all around. And it's almost too bad that, you know, we only saw sort of the caricature that was left from all of that. But
it's true. You know, the last decade or so of Oakland football hasn't been its greatest. You know, starting in 2001, you know, that was kind of the high water moment of this franchise in the last 10 years, you know, the loss in the Tuck Rule game to the Patriots.
Although, no, they were in the Super Bowl the next year.
The next year they were?
Yeah, they lost to Tampa Bay.
Was it the year before?
No, year after, I would say. I just remember.
Okay. All right, yeah.
But so, yeah, so the year after that, when they lost to the Bucks in the Super Bowl, was the high water mark with Rich Gannon.
Yep, yep. So I take that back. But still, from that point on, 2002, it's just been – you know, sort of a team in disarray. Well, it's interesting to see, you know, now that the passing of the torch, I believe his son's taking over. But, you know, this Raiders team, you know, in the last couple of years, it seems like they've really shown up and beaten some good teams. They have flashes. They just don't seem to have the total depth that they need, you know, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. You know, a quarterback is the main thing. I mean, they've missed on some draft picks in the last few years. Jamarcus Russell, Darius Heyward-Bey, you know, is a decent wide receiver, but certainly I don't think if you go back and look at that draft class, I don't think you would take him at number 7.
No.
But, you know, I think they're going to beat a lot of teams. And you look, Houston last week, you know, Texans are a team people have anointed for the Super Bowl. This reminds me, I totally almost forgot this. I'm sitting in there watching the game on my laptop. This guy is sitting next to me, you know, pretending not to watch the game, but watching the game. And at some point he looks over, you know, he sees that I'm watching the Patriots game. He's like, oh, so you're a big New England fan. He's like, oh, let me show you this picture of my buddy. He pulls out his phone. His friend has a tattoo that on his forearm, quite large, you know, the size of a grapefruit, and it's a Houston Texans logo. And around the
Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
I can now. Sorry. Start over at around the Texans logo.
Okay. So this guy's got a tattoo on his forearm. It's a Houston Texans logo. Quite large, quite aggressive. And then around the logo, it says Houston Texans 2012 Super Bowl champions.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just a level of fandom that I can't even necessarily comprehend. But, you know, that's people to pick this team. People think this team, this Texans team, is capable of winning the Super Bowl this year. And they very, very well may be. But, you know, Oakland went out and beat them in a tough game. So.
Yeah, well, not anymore, man. Jesus, with their injuries this week, Andre Johnson's going to be out for a while and Mario Williams done for the year.
Yeah, that's the biggest loss right there. He was really kind of the piece that made that defense as aggressive, as dominant as it was at times. That's a huge loss for them. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to bounce back from that.
No, for sure. Although Arian Foster's been really impressive since he's been back. I guess the only other thing I would say is, you know, the team that not a whole lot of people are talking about just because it's just, I guess, business as usual is Green Bay. I watched them Sunday night, and I'll tell you what, man, Aaron Rodgers made a couple throws. He made one towards the end of the game, and he was running full speed to his right, and it was just like a fucking 30-yard laser. I mean, this guy, I mean, no disrespect to your guy, no disrespect to anybody. I mean, I don't think anybody's better than this guy right now. I mean, he's incredible, man.
He's playing out of his mind. I'm looking at the line right now from this game. 26-39, 396 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's a good day at the office. And, you know, the difference between Rodgers and a guy like Brady or Manning when he was healthy is – without question, his athleticism and the things that he can do getting outside the pocket, because I think he's got just as good of an arm as those guys do. The fact that he's so mobile and athletic and can create space, you know, it leads to so many big plays for those guys because he's getting outside the pocket. His receivers are breaking off their routes, and he can throw it 60 yards in the air, you know, and hit a dime out there. He's such an exciting and dangerous player for opposing defenses. I think I've said opposing defenses like six times tonight. I think that's my go-to phrase of the night, opposing defenses. But no, he's playing great. Yeah. A quiet 5-0 for Green Bay. You know, just to think that they just to think how good they were last year throughout that playoff run and in the Super Bowl, and the fact that so many of their key players were hurt, you know, with a healthy squad this year. I mean, if they can stay healthy late into the year, you know, I don't know how you beat this team. I really don't.
I'll tell you what, man, I can't wait till they lock horns with the Lions. It's going to be awesome. I just say Lockhorns.
Somebody you did, man. That's
kill me. Just kill me.
We are just really dipping into the cliche bucket tonight. Pulling out all the winners. When do they play Detroit? What week is that?
I don't have it on the top of my head, and I don't want to open a new window because sometimes when I do that, when we've been
well,
going
don't
for this
open
long,
anything on NFL.com because it just breaks into this ridiculous music. All right, here we go. Well, look at this. So they play Detroit November 24th, week 12, the Thanksgiving game. Holy shit. How Jesus. Awesome is that, man?
Dude, I cannot wait for that.
How
holy
awesome
shit.
Is that?
Best Thanksgiving ever by far.
That is unbelievable. They play them so they play them Thanksgiving and then they play them the final game of the season.
Oh my God.
On New Year's Day.
Oh, I'm hard right now just hearing that.
I just finished.
That's
something to look forward to.
We're over an hour here. The last thing I guess I would say is just I've been, in addition to the Giants loss, I've been a little extra depressed this week because this is usually such a good time of year with the NBA preseason in swing and getting ready for the NBA to start going. And obviously we got the news this week that the first 2 weeks of the season are already canceled and, you know, the owners and players are nowhere near being close. And it just bums me out that I can't watch, first of all. And secondly, you know, there's a lot of guys, and Paul Pierce is my favorite Celtic, but for some reason just the idea that it seems like, you know, We're down to our last few grains of sand in Kevin Garnett's hourglass, and it just seems like having to miss any of you know him still being impactful is really bums me out, man.
It's tough. I mean, what's your take on the whole situation? You know, I haven't been following it very closely, but after watching, you know, the NFL and the players and the owners coming together, getting a deal done, not, you know, missing some of the training camp, but making sure that they had a full preseason, making sure that the regular season was intact. And then, you know, even throughout the whole process of negotiations between the players and the owners, it was done on such a civil level, you know, and you could tell that there was real mutual respect between both groups. And then when things were solved, you know, when they came to an agreement, it just felt like it was a very mature adult situation and the way that they handled it and the way that the compromise was reached. And just from the little that I've seen of the NBA, you know, David Stern in his press conference announcing that the first 2 weeks of the season, he just had this, like, he just looked like a smug fuck, you know, talking. I didn't get the sense of like any remorse or any, you know, understanding of I think what this could do to the NBA in terms of its popularity and in terms of really hurting the fans. I don't think the NBA is necessarily as safe as a league and as a piece of the entertainment pie as maybe they think they are. I don't know. I mean, I get the sense that, you know, like you said, there's no indication that there's any, you know, there's any closeness here in between the two parties. It seems like they're still way far apart in terms of the deals. And it highlights kind of the dysfunctionality of the league in general, you know, and certainly in terms of some of the contracts and then, you know, and the revenue sharing aspect of it. You know, it just doesn't bode well. I'm just surprised that they let it come to this. And I'm surprised that we are where we're at with a lot of animosity on either side. I think they're in dangerous territory.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the one thing I do think is that I do think contracts should be shorter. I think 4 years ought to be the ceiling on a contract. But, you know, a lot of the other stuff, you know, I've been reading a lot, and obviously I'm not, you know, I'm not the smartest dude when it comes to all this financial stuff. So, but
tell that to the protesters, man.
I don't trust Stern. I don't buy what the owners are selling right now. I've talked to a few people who feel the same way. And one, a friend of ours, I talked to this summer at a wedding who is a business student at MIT. And he was saying to me that, you know, if you look at the owners, what they pay, there's all sorts of weird stuff in their books that they count as expenses that aren't real expenses. You know, even just like when they determine the value of a team, they overpay for that. And so basically their expenses end up being higher than they actually need to be. And I don't buy it, man. And I think, you know, aside from the fact, I mean, look, contracts need to be shorter, owners need to be smarter, but I think putting in a hard cap, you know, the superstars are still going to make most of that. It's just going to hurt the mid-level players. I think that the NBA has been experiencing lots and lots of growth as a total league. And so I think as the league continues to grow in popularity, which it was, you know, hopefully it still will after this ends, and they continue to get more TV deals like they've been getting, and they continue their revenue sharing, I think, you know, I think that's positive. I think the system is working. I think the unfortunate thing here is that a lot of the people seem to be very angry with the players, and I think there's this whole thing, and maybe I'm wrong, but it always seems to me like there's some sort of feeling that fans project when it comes to the NBA, and I think it might be partially racially based, or maybe just because it's kind of like the most naked league. Like, you know, they're not wearing helmets, they're not wearing pads, they're out there all the time. But, you know, people are very upset about how greedy they are and how much money they make. I mean, when you think about it, guys like Kobe Bryant are really underpaid when you think about how much money they make for the Lakers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I talk about the bad contract situation, I'm only looking at it as, you know, there's been so many instances of organizations completely overvaluing, you know, unproven talent or talent
exactly.
That isn't there. And then, you know, basically handcuffing their franchise to a player who is worth a third of what they're paying him and, you know, miring their organization. I mean, you can't fault the player for that, you know, whatsoever.
Right.
And like you said, the real stars in that league are making so much money for these organizations that, you know, that the smart ones, when they get a player like that, hold on to them. But, you know, I look at it as, to me, I get the sense that the owners have made mistakes. I think there may be too many teams in the league, and they're trying to, you know, come up with a way to keep lining their pockets and, you know, without accepting the reality that they, I think, bear most of the blame in terms of some of the issues that they have with the players' union. So,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I think they're kind of lucky right now because football season's in full swing. I guess there's probably some people who are kind of still watching baseball. I can't necessarily understand that. But, you know, I think as we get further along in this, you know, the first 2 weeks, I don't, you know, diehard fans are going to be hurt by that. But they're going to be in real trouble if they get another month or two down the road and they still haven't come to an agreement. And all of a sudden the possibility of a season being canceled is on the table and a real possibility. You know, that can't be good. Just another reason why I've taken to watching hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, and who
you
know, knows?
Maybe you might want to get in on that. You might want to get you can back in.
Oh, well, the one very unique thing I think about this situation is that this is, you know, if anything, the owners have less leverage because, you know, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, those guys can make $50 million this year playing over in Europe. And I will say, if we can't have an NBA season, it would be kind of cool if a lot of those guys were overseas and we were able to watch them play. And I just think the owners should be careful because, you know, this is a big enough game and an international game. And so I just feel like, you know, it's not like the NFL where these guys have nowhere else to go.
Does this open the door for a World Basketball Association?
Oh, it'd be awesome,
where all the teams are owned by nut job billionaires, like moguls in the natural resources fields. Like, how sick would that be if there was just like all teams that were owned by billionaire, like Saudi oil sheiks and crazy Russian mine owners, and everything was just completely over the top and crazy.
Every player flies, has their own Concorde that they take to the game and shit.
That's what I'm hoping for. I mean, honestly, that's what I'm hoping for at this point. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, it's good talking to you.
Yeah, man, likewise. It's good to get back in touch with my life, you know, on the outside while I'm down here in isolation. You know, this is a good time. I can go back into hiding now.
All right. So when we talk next week, you're going to be back in Massachusetts?
I'll be back in Massachusetts, and I'll be, you know, ready to break down week 5. Hopefully we'll both be talking about a win this week, you know. But a lot of exciting things going on in the NFL. So everybody, make sure you follow us at our respective web pages, chatnewyorkgiants.com, chatpats.com, on Twitter, at NickLaRock. At Ben Babcock with one of those little underscore lines in between the names.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at Chat Pats, at Chat New York Giants, at Chat Seltz.
And everybody out there.
All the plugs, yeah. Chatsports.com.
Be sure to follow my good buddy Tiger on Twitter also. You know.
Son of a bitch. You dropping names. Careful going outside. Don't get hit with a Molotov cocktail. There's probably some crazy hippie with a cardboard sign pooping on your lawn right now as we speak.
If I had a lawn. All right, man. Have a good night.
All right, man. Later.
The master plan. I'm in the caravan on my way to Maryland with my man 2 Tex to take over this project. They call him 2 Tex. He tote 2 Tex. And when he start the bus, he like to ask who's next. I got my honey on the Amtrak with the crack in the crack of her ass. 2 pounds of hash in the stash. I wait for hun to make some quick cash. I told her she could be lieutenant, bitch got gas. At last, I'm literally lounging black. Sitting back, counting double-digit thousand stacks. Had to re-up to see what's up with my peeps. Toyota dealer gone, had it cheap on the Jeep. See who got smoked, what rumors were spread. Last I heard, I was dead, with 6 to the head. Then I got the phone call, it couldn't hit me harder. We got infiltrated, like you know at the Carter. Her tech got murdered in the town I never heard of by some bitch that now heard her over nickel-plated burners. And my bitch, swear to God, she won't snitch. I told her when she hit the bricks, I make the hooker rich. Conspiracies, she'll be home in 3. Until then, I looks out for the whole family. A true G, that's me, blowing like a bubble.